Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another interview. Today we have an interview with Sophia, the founder of Girl Up 2030, which is based in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. They aim to bring awareness, advocacy, and action to issues inspired by the UN Global Goals for Sustainable Development, aiming for social, environmental, and economic justice by 2030. They work to empower girls along their journey from leader to change maker through organizing, fundraising, and communication. Be sure to follow this podcast on Instagram at icebreaker.podcast and check out icebreakerpodcast.card.co. Also, be sure to follow Girl Up on Instagram at girlup2030. I loved recording this episode and I hope you have a good time listening to us talk about the bridge between feminism and environmentalism. Hi guys, today we are doing our very first Instagram takeover and podcast episode with Girl Up 2030. We have Sophia Berman from the Girl Up team, and we're going to be discussing the intersection of gender and feminism along with climate education. So first off, tell me a little bit about Girl Up 2030, your goals, and introduce yourself.
Hi, so I'm Sophia, and I am the founder of our club, Girl Up 2030, and we're based right outside of Philadelphia, PA. And so Girl Up 2030 was born in the midst of COVID-19, the pandemic as we know, which had shut down a lot of the world. And that's when a lot of vulnerabilities had been exposed, whether that be social, environmental, and economic systems, and above all, intensified pre-existing inequities. So Girl Up 2030 was founded so that high school students in our school could work together towards a more equitable, accepting, and resilient society. And so just this year, it was our second year, and actually our first year in person, which was wonderful to finally see everyone in person. And our club specifically brings awareness, advocacy, and action to issues inspired by the UN Global Goals for Sustainable Development, which are a set of 17 global goals laid out by the United Nations to achieve by 2030. So our aim is to connect SDG 5, shout out to that one, because it says that gender equality is not only a fundamental human right, it is a necessary foundation for a peaceful, prosperous, and sustainable world. And we look to connect this in the actions we take and ultimately inspire and build change makers through this.
That's fantastic. So I'm just going to start off with a simple question. What does the phrase climate change is a human rights issue mean to you? So like, how is feminism and how are climate change linked?
I mean, I think this phrase speaks volumes to just how complex climate change is and how it comes to and an intersection with a bunch of other global challenges, such as achieving gender equality. Climate change is not just an environmental issue, but it's an economic, social, and human one. It's a human problem, one that is generated by, abetted by, and can be mitigated by humans. So, you know, the impacts, especially you mentioned feminism and women, the impacts especially of climate change are not equal, and they definitely multiply and intensify for vulnerable populations like the poor, people of color, older adults, children, women and girls. It can vary by location, urban or rural, or possibly those with disability or a chronic illness.
I completely agree. And, you know, speaking with that, the climate crisis, it's not gender neutral at all, especially when it comes to sectors like agriculture, where women in low middle income countries are, you know, primary procurers and primary producers, primary workers working to secure income, putting added pressure on girls and other people who often have to deal with the disproportionate effects of climate change. So this kind of goes into why and how are people of color disproportionately impacted because of environmental racism and environmental injustice? And why does this threaten their human rights?
I mean, firstly, I feel like we have to establish what environmental justice is, and that is to have the confidence to say that you, your community and environment is safe for you and productive. Environmental racism is going to be describing or is describing the disproportionate number of neighborhoods populated primarily by people of color that are subject to hazards like toxic waste facilities, landfills, and very large sources of pollution. So this threatens their environmental justice. They are in turn more vulnerable to health risks. Climate change, as I would say, is a health issue as well. So in terms of reproductive rights, it is very much of a concern because it puts women and those with reproductive systems at risk and vulnerable. And you know, what comes to mind when you, I feel like you think about climate change, it's typically the impact. We might think weather, higher temperatures, but we also have to think about the source. And the source of climate change, there's so many different drivers of it, but those sources happen to be many of which happen to release high amount of pollutants are located in areas or neighborhoods that threaten people of color's environmental justice, young kids. And so I think I wanna go back to the question where, why is it so important that we empower, I wanna bring it back to gender inequities and equalities, because girls, I truly believe that girls and women are so true to how we solve the climate crisis, because if we are to tackle climate change and the underlying social and economic inequities that fuel it, we're going to need more girls in STEM, for example, a field where research shows there's a gap and girls and women are systemically tracked away from science and math throughout their educations. We're going to need more access to quality education for girls worldwide because climate change is a global issue. So I'll leave it with how the empowerment of women and girls is critical.
Yeah, so how have institutional regulations and like corporate decisions, government policies, have those mitigated and prevented communities of women of color? And what can they do to support minority communities like this?
So I would say that policy can at times feel daunting and at times something not in our sphere of influence, but it can very much be the needle to change. And I'm going to use the plastic crisis as an example that is something we are making progress to, but is something we have definitely waited on in terms of mitigation efforts. The plastic crisis, it's sold as this individual problem. You know, we hear it when we're in elementary school, reduce, reuse, recycle, 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 recycle. But the emphasis should really be on reducing it. The truth is less than 10% of plastic is recycled. So most of it is either buried in a landfill, burned in an incinerator, causing air pollution, not to mention when you burn plastic dioxide in its form, which is one of the most toxic materials known in science and has been linked to cancer, or the plastic could wind up in the ocean where it lasts for centuries. But my point is, it's heartbreaking because a lot of these plants and garbage incinerators are often winding up in low-income communities and communities of color. So how do we solve the plastic crisis when it seems to be so prevalent in everyday items in our lives? How can we support minority communities of color? We need to focus on the source. We want to mitigate the problem, not adapt to it to get to a threshold of no return to restoration. And so where we're seeing that in policy, for example, is there's a plastic bag ban in the state of New Jersey, which made it so retailers and food service businesses would no longer be permitted to distribute single-use plastic bags, and it shifts what we're using. And it's great to see that there's progress being made. We have a long way to go, but a mitigational approach is key to create more equal solution, or to bring environmental justice to those who especially are at risk or more vulnerable.
Yeah, and I completely agree. I live in New Jersey, and you can already see the effects that are happening with the plastic ban within stores and big corporations. But what also comes along with environmental justice is the problems with healthcare, where lower income communities are often living in cancer zones or Superfund sites, where they're more at a risk for issues like lung disease and gastrointestinal issues if there's problems with their water quality. So in your view, how does the climate crisis exacerbate such inequalities within healthcare and the related social tensions within low-income minority communities?
I would have to say that the climate crisis is a health crisis. Climate change gives rise to health problems, which can in turn create tension and, as you said, added stress in communities that are already vulnerable, especially lower income minority communities who have more economic and health vulnerabilities. Climate change can cause a lot of negative health outcomes we're not even exactly sure of yet. And so this is an unequal added stress that tends to unfortunately burden those in poverty and can actually drive the cycle of poverty. As someone who has horrendous allergies, and just in my area, the change in longer prolonged seasons in terms of the effects of global warming driving longer seasons, that could increase the rates of asthma for youth in urban cities, for example. So it's happening here, it's happening now, it's happening right in my city, Philadelphia. So it's adding a lot of stress on top of, climate change is the threat multiplier in terms of health. We could think about it on the storm side, how it's displacing people, the health risks, or polluted water, polluted air, what that could in turn create. There are so many different sources for the health risks that are rising up, and not to mention how we're dealing with a pandemic on our hands at the same time. So by mitigating and focusing on climate change, we are also tackling so many issues at once. So truly, it is, that is a great question.
Thank you. So moving on from this sort of healthcare thing, how do you think period poverty and fatal maternity outcomes, all relating to the gender issue, how are those related to climate change specifically? And why are those with female assigned reproductive systems at a greater disadvantage in the healthcare community?
I would say that those already living with socioeconomic circumstances that would create compounding things to deal with, like period poverty, it's again a burden where climate change is going to create this added layer of stress. And just this year in our Girl Up Club, we raised funds to, tackle and battle combat period poverty in our city by creating period kits. But in terms of this all relating to climate change, again, it's so, a lot of it is so intertwined with another, whether that be the health risks, climate change. It's scary. I'm not exactly a healthcare worker or in the field, but I can only imagine that not knowing exactly why you have a health issue, and maybe communities don't know why. It has to do with definitely a lack of awareness that climate change is bringing. Because again, what do we think when we think of climate change? It's usually the aftermath, but it's really the sources that are causing and propelling a lot of these long-term problems that are going to require change now to fix.
Yeah, so going off of that sort of awareness, how about education? How is the right to education for all compromised by the climate crisis, especially in rural communities like outside of the United States, perhaps?
Most definitely. Climate change has been tied to an increase in the frequency and severity of dangerous weather patterns or all around conditions. It could be on both sides of the spectrums, drought, flooding. And as a result, this can shoulder and shift out of responsibilities for, let's say, younger women and girls all around the world. They could, as a result, fall out of the labor force, fall behind in education, especially where girls and women take on a more traditional household role, depending, that's location dependent. It could be a setback to our growth, to how we, to tackle climate change, we're going to need youth, girls, underrepresented demographics on board, because it impacts everyone. Climate change is very a human rights issue, and the impacts aren't equal. So I would say that focusing on not just education, but quality education will be key to how we uplift voices and get more voices that are underrepresented in power to tackle this issue.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I actually did a guest interview a while back about climate education. And when I was doing the research for that and when I was talking to my guest, we learned that women and girls, they experience sort of like heightened social, economic, and health impacts of climate change, whether it be through like slow disasters like droughts or emergencies like floods and storms and heat waves. And because women are more likely to experience human rights abuses, there are so many documented impacts on their well-being. And especially when you're talking about girls, when you're talking about adolescent girls who are at a risk of being pulled out of school to alleviate like domestic burdens like fetching water or working at the home, leaving school makes girls less likely to be informed about climate education and further increases their vulnerability. So I definitely agree with you on that, and I loved your response for that. So the next question that sort of arises from this is, why should we be spending precious time and resources on huge systemic problems like gender inequality?
I mean, if we're serious about building a better, stronger, and fairer world, we have to be serious about investing in girls, because girls are so critical for social change. You can't solve a lot of global challenges without focusing on the inequalities and inequities that fuel it. So with that said, the climate crisis, again, is it's a threat multiplier. It's going to make achieving gender equality harder, because climate change's impacts lead already socially marginalized groups such as women, indigenous communities, to be more disadvantaged because of gaps in social protection policies, lacks of access to quality education, a lack of decision-making power to enact policies that could counteract these negative social implications. So focusing on gender equality is a long time worthwhile cause, and it has been for me. It's been working with girls in climate action, or not just girls, but working together with school staff, students in my school, has been very empowering. I like to say we are the regeneration, so together we need to rise.
For sure. And, you know, gender equality benefits everyone. So it should be, we need to spend time and resources on these systemic problems, because when you fix the root of the issue, you can really get to the other myriad of issues that it's easier to put Band-Aids on stuff, but it's not effective in the long term. Absolutely. And right now we need long-term change. Yeah. So why do we need especially like gender sensitive responses to climate change, and what are the implications of the climate crisis on gender inequality?
I would say that the implications of the climate crisis means that we could be further increasing the STEM gap. We're driving further a wedge in having girls and having them with achieving their full potential, because when girls are safe and protected and have access to, you know, clean water, a home, a shelter, this is key to putting them in the best position to be the voice, to spark their change, wherever that may be. But I just know that in Girl Up, we see that happen, and connecting with girls worldwide to tackle such issues brings us all closer to solving many global challenges, not just the climate crisis, because the climate crisis, again, is related to so much that we've gone over, whether that be it overlaps into immigration, it overlaps into displacement, it overlaps into food, hunger, the quality of food, the quality of water, quality of health, where people live. So, and also the quality of life. Whatever someone's context of in a places or situation, it can be threatened in a unique way based on who you are, your identity, because the climate crisis, again, it's not always a fair and equal thing, depending on where you are. You might be more vulnerable. And so we need more gender sensitive responses because of that, because climate change isn't going to impact everyone the same.
Yeah, so going off of this sort of disproportionate impact of climate change, should rural and indigenous communities, especially women in these communities, be leading climate change adaption? And how is their work in agriculture especially prevalent to the current climate crisis facing society today?
I mean, the answer is, of course. Our goal should to have and uplift communities, especially of women in rural indigenous communities, to be leading climate change adaptation, especially women who have experience in agriculture methods that are sustainable. A lot of methods we use today aren't, whether that be the amount of pesticides we use that ultimately lead to harm in our oceans through runoff, and then we have it could be slashing and burning. There are many types, but I think when we learn from people who are so connected to their work and they're with nature, we can be more in tune with sustainability and growing and being prosperous. I find that because I volunteer at a farm near me. It's also an education center. But one thing they said is, you know, sometimes people think maybe that sustainability and prosperity can't be linked, but they definitely can, and they use sustainability there. So in terms of how we uplift rural women, I think one solution I saw from a UNED article is they suggest the elimination of any school fees or provision of stipends. I'm going to go back to how I think education is a big part of how we help people lead change or awareness. So the goal is to have girls and women educated, healthy and safe, because there they can have the power to transform their communities. Uplifting women and girls is not only the right thing to do, it's the smart thing to do and key to how we face the climate today, because when we lift rural indigenous communities who are working in agriculture, they can help us how we manage or go about the sector of agriculture and how that's its relationships in terms of driving climate change.
Yes, I completely agree. You know, the future is green, the future of the economy, the future. We have shown that renewable energies are sufficient and are sustainable to a long-term change. And going back to what you said about, you were talking about indigenous women, they have also been the forerunners and leaders in environmental conservation because they've experienced the greatest impacts of climate change. They have the knowledge and the expertise where we as communities can build resilience to climate impact and to cutting greenhouse gas emissions. So it's definitely important to take into all of their perspectives, because empowering women means more effective climate change solutions. And then going off of that, what is needed to help rural women lead the change? I know you kind of discussed it already, but is there anything more you can talk to about that?
I would say not only education, but and expanding our network for support for one another, finding someone to, or I guess in terms of the agriculture sector, might there be ways to, I guess, it can, agriculture is not necessarily an easy task. So I would think that a good, to help for a woman lead the change is not only just education, but agriculture, whether that be mental health support. That is one of an issue rising in agriculture jobs is mental health. That is so important. I think finding balance is so key, because we as change makers need to find, I believe, you know, to reflect to, in order to have healthy and productive living and to be facing such huge issues, we also have to focus on ourselves. So providing that support for rural women, I think, would be key at the end of the day.
Yes, totally. And, you know, going back to all of these connections between gender and poverty and the climate crisis, because everything is so deeply interconnected and there are so many intricacies within the climate crisis and everything that it entails as a threat multiplier, definitely including more equitable solutions to all the communities and taking into various perspectives is very important to continue to combat this crisis for the betterment of our future. So that's all I have for my questions. And now I just want to go into something about yourself and what are three movies you would recommend to my audience and why? Something about anything about sustainability or feminism or all of the above.
I recommend I Am Greta, which follows Greta, who's a young teenage girl climate activist, on her journey, getting people to listen about the world's environmental problems. It's inspiring and also shows you can never be too young to be the voice to spark the change. And speaking of which, I 100% recommend watching the documentary Microplastic Madness. It's a documentary that tells the story of how fifth graders from a New York urban public school are taking action and teaching their community about microplastics in their school cafeteria culture. So it's great to see such young kids talking about a complex topic at first glance. And lastly, I guess if you're looking for an animated movie, classic is WALL-E. It's one of my childhood favorites. WALL-E spends his days compacting trash on an Earth that is no longer habitable.
I love WALL-E, and I will definitely check out the other movies you recommended. I was looking to watch I Am Greta earlier, actually, but so I don't know about you, but I definitely prefer books over movies. So what are three books you would recommend to my audience and why?
A great one is called Imagine It, A Handbook for a Happier Planet by Laurie David and Heather Reisman. I know sometimes the climate crisis can feel very big to our own individual actions. In fact, taking action can feel very daunting or, as a matter of fact, overwhelming. So this is a great book to find ways you can incorporate more eco-friendly actions in your everyday life. It could be great acts to incorporate into your community, club, family, you name it. Another great book is Don't Even Think About It, Why Our Brains Are Wired to Ignore Climate Change. It's written by George Marshall. It's an interesting book because it goes back to evolutionary origins, and I think kind of also the psychology. It's such a it's a global challenge, certainly climate change, so how we tackle it can be something we easily want to ignore and push to the side. So I think it gives great insight into our wiring and thinking. And lastly, one of my favorite all-time books is called Regeneration, Ending the Climate Crisis in One Generation by Paul Hawken. And it truly goes back to tie in everything I feel like we talked about today. I mean, we are part of this regeneration, a generation tasked with bringing our climate crisis under control for the health and well-being of all life on our planet before it's too late. Our collective action is key.
I love what you said. I will definitely check them out. I've heard of Regeneration, so I was looking about reading that. Personally, I would recommend the Green Ideas collection by the Penguin Random House. They're super short, cute little books that talk about a bunch of green ideas, and they talk about ideas that have changed the way we think and talk about Earth, especially as Earth has become so altered by humans over time. And yeah, that's all I have. Any last statements you would like to share with our audience?
You know, now that I am on my summer break as a student, finding time to reflect, recharge, and rejuvenate through activities you enjoy, whether that be the arts, being outdoors, being active in the community, or enjoying social or quiet time, balance is not only key to productive and healthy living, but it's key to being a change maker.
Thank you for those last words. It was great meeting you, and I look forward to doing our Instagram takeover on Saturday, I think.
Yes.
Okay. Hey. Check out Girl Up, and it was great meeting you.
It was great meeting you as well.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening, guys. I hope you enjoyed it. Be sure to follow Girl Up 2030 on Instagram at Girl Up 2030. And if you enjoyed this episode, be sure to check out our Instagrams as we are doing a takeover and answering your questions. That's all for today, and have a great summer.